Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show podcast, episode number 115. So we've got another little mini milestone there, and it's a great night. Thanks to Eric Jude of Frozen Creek Studios for the great intro music. We like to give credit for that as often as we can. And tonight I have with me Daniel Dark and Holly Marie Philippi as our co-hosts, who should be on the air with you right now.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for the show.
What?
There you
go. I missed something.
You were playing
man.
The show on your computer. I could hear it.
Well, I know, and it's completely stuck because it's not even playing. And I've closed the window out. So the window said, so this is just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to mute that. Yeah, because we could drive. Yeah,
I mean, it's like flipping me out here because it's like not even on.
That's odd.
There,
the
now.
The show is taking on a life of its own. This is
yeah,
fantastic.
It's like possessed or something.
The rise of the machines.
The life of
creatives.
Nothing is ever, never the same or usual, I tell you. Especially on a day like this. It's a crazy day. Holly and I are recovering from a fantastic concert in Lexington that took place last night, Rupp Arena. And then Daniel's recovering from a very exciting day in his end with a cover reveal. So we are going to talk about both things, but let's give Mr. Dark a chance first and foremost to talk about Victorian Catsup. So if you would, tell us what about the cover reveal. Congratulations.
Well, appreciate it. And wouldn't have happened without you. This book is the book that I use to actually recover my mind after having a stroke. And I will, you know, when the book comes out at the end of the month, 90% of my proceeds will be going to blood banks and different things like that. As repayment for keeping me alive and having the blood that I needed when I needed it and stuff. So, you know, when you buy that book and everything, you can pretty much take off part of it as charity to going out to, because that's where my proceeds are going. I believe in giving back to the community. You know, when they give to me, you know, especially, and if it hadn't been for the blood banks and stuff in my area having the blood that I needed, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you tonight. So,
that's right.
But the book itself is, you know, about Victorian ketchup, which the book will have over 200 recipes of ketchup. And over 60 different flavors that they had back in the Victorian days that you will not find in present market.
Right.
Hines, Hunts, and five other big canning companies branded tomato ketchup as a condiment in the United States back in the late 1800s. And nowadays, if you ask somebody about a ketchup besides tomato, they look at you like you're crazy. But mm-hmm. In the Victorian days, there was, you know, multitudes of different ketchups that you could go and buy, make, and different things like that. And I searched out and brought out all, you know, a lot of the different ketchups that you could get in those days or make in those days with fresh fruits and fresh vegetables and stuff like that of the time. And that is what this book is. It's a compendium, for a lack of a better term, on ketchup. So if you're wondering about, you know, about a good anchovy ketchup or a mushroom ketchup or a walnut ketchup, you'll be able to find it in that book. You know, if you're looking for tomato ketchup or a blueberry ketchup or a peach ketchup or, you know, a cucumber ketchup, you'll be able to find it in that book. You know, and those are the, you know, recipes that I'm actually, you know, demonstrating in the book so that you can go and, you know, make you a ketchup if you want to. Now, like I said, you know, this was my rehab book. The recipes that are in there are copied directly from Victorian cookbooks. So there will be, you know, things that you'll look at that, you know, the spelling doesn't look right or different things like that. That is because I kept them the way that the Victorians had them, the way that you would have found it in that original cookbook, so that you can actually, you know, get a feel more of what that receipt was for that ketchup.
And they are called receipts. You might want to explain, because I told Steve, people are going to look at us and say, them crazy people don't know how to spell recipes. But they didn't call it recipes then.
Yes,
they called them
receipts. This is the Victorian theme here, so yeah.
The recipe would have been, you know, like if you went to a doctor or something like that and he made you a pill or a tonic or something like that, it started out with that, and then the food industry took over where they make something, and then the recipe is how you take it. But the receipt was actually what you used to make it with, the ingredients, what you needed to make that with.
I get you.
So this book will correct American society and get things set straight. So that's another benefit of buying this book. It'll get you using their terms receipt and recipe properly now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that I'm not really worried about, you know, because going back, it, you know, 100 years, you know, back to my time period, you know,
right.
Not everybody's wanting to do that. But, you know, I am using terms that people, you know, may have to look up different things to find out what it is. Like when you're looking through the book and it says, you know, a certain amount of long, they're talking about long peppers. And that is an actual type of pepper, you know, or, you know, a race of something, which is one root. You know, there's different terms in there like that, that, you know, most people will sit there and they'll look at this and they'll go, what the hell is this? But that, you know, but they, you know, once they start studying and looking, they will find out that in Victorian times, they had multitudes of different things that they ate that we don't see today. We have a lot of things today that we eat that they didn't have, but, you know, there's a lot
food.
Of techniques that we've come out with, you know, over the years. And a lot of the foods that you're seeing nowadays are takeoffs of what was used back in the day. So, yeah, but this book is a pleasure book to me on being able to put it out and being able to give back to, you know, the people that have kept me alive and being able to write more books. And that is, you know, something that I felt very strongly about, so.
Well, very cool.
Right.
And your editor on this, of course, we want to give credit to Bobby Rich and the cover, the great gold and green kind of real nice stylized Victorian-style cover.
Oh, gorgeous.
Was Olivia Pro Design. She is based out of the Ukraine and is a part of the international flavor of our book world. And, you know, even on the indie level, you know, you end up working with a lot of collaborate a lot of people, you know, from across the world that you never actually get to meet in person, or hopefully maybe one day we will, but it's so cool how that works out.
Truly,
and,
truly talented.
It comes together. This great Ukrainian cover artist was able to come up with a great cover for a Victorian ketchup book. And so that's very, very cool, and you got to see it. All the Seventh Star Press channels, of course, have it there. It's on our website. It's on our blog front page. Yeah, you can go
Instagram,
see it anywhere you find us. I mean, you're going to see the cover of it. But do check it out because it is really cool. Mm-hmm. And just such a cool book, too. I mean, it's just unusual. And, something completely different.
You learn about the history and stuff at Ketchup, too. Stuff, goes way back. And I had no idea, just no idea. So it's very informative. And then plus you get, all those recipes, like you said, for the peach and different stuff like that. But I can't wait to try all these. I mean, this sounds phenomenal. I have ate his Bloody Jack ketchup, and it's fantastic. I love his Bloody Jack ketchup. It is delicious.
And that one is not in the book.
Yeah, that one's not in the book. That's a Daniel recipe.
Yeah,
there
are a lot of ones that I use for my ketchup company that are not in the book.
Right.
And, you have to forgive me for that, but it's proprietary, on what I use for my ketchups for the company that I actually sell out to the public. But, that is, a lot of the ketchups that I started with, to make the ketchups that I have today are in the book.
Right.
So, you will find the derivative of the ketchup that I make today.
Right.
In the book. So,
You can make your own variation.
I had to update the processes and different things like that and change different things to make it, more for today's times of what is, standard practice for today and health codes and different things like that, then, leaving it a fortnight, in a crock jar, in a cool place so it'll, sit there and ferment properly, just and not poison people, so.
Hey, no, right. That's called building up your immune system.
Oh, man. Well, we're excited.
That's building it up.
One cool book, and won't be too long till it's out, May 29th. And get ready and enhance your kitchen with Victorian Catsup Receipts of the Past. It's going to be fantastic.
Yep.
And Holly and I are gaining our hearing back right now. We had quite a show last night in Lexington with Five Finger Death Punch, Shinedown, and then the opening bands were Star Set and Bad Wolves. So it was quite the metal hard rock show, even though, Star Set, it's really hard to classify them. They're like a mix of a lot of things.
They're called Cinemagraphic Rock is what they call them. But to me, I would classify them as techno metal, because I mean they are metal, and they come out astronaut suits, fantastic, and I mean and play metal. So all four of them bands could have easily just put on a concert themselves by themselves.
Well,
phenomenal.
When you see a guitar player and a bass player and a drummer on stage, they're in astronaut suits at the beginning. There are only two possibilities. It's going to be a total disaster and comical, or it's going to be great. There really is no chance of middle ground when you got three guys in the band dressed like astronauts. So thankfully, it was the great part of the equation. So that was awesome. And it was a homecoming for Chris Cale, the bassist of Five Finger Death Punch, who I used to work with when
Shout
he was in a band
Chris.
Called Cut Love Kill back in Lexington, Kentucky, back in the end of the millennium, beginning of the 2000 period. We used to do DIY, do-it-yourself shows at the Alika Temple and Southland Drive in Lexington, shows at clubs like the Millennium and Rock Haven and Firehouse and places around Lexington and Richmond, around the region, putting together shows when I was helping with booking clubs and doing show promotions and doing a lot of indie music stuff at that time, and worked with Chris regularly, and great guy. He was a real go-getter. He's definitely the band leader, organizer kind of guy, and definitely, I mean, he was a very self-motivated, very driven sort of fellow. So no surprise that, you know, he ended up being, you know, in Five Finger Death Punch. But for him coming back to Lexington, it's got to be wild standing on stage in front of 10,000, you know, fans that are just roaring and in your own hometown. And he really got into it. He led the crowd in a chant of C-A-T-S, cats, cats, cats.
And Ivan's
University,
like, I don't know
Kentucky.
What the F just happened, man.
Yeah, that's what Ivan said.
Ivan's so confused.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't
but
know
that's
what
the,
just happened.
Yeah, that's the kind of like the chant for the fans of the basketball team and even the football team and all here. So Ivan was a little confused, I think, at that one. But he did come out later in a Kentucky jersey, so that was really cool.
Yeah,
love their – these guys have another dimension. That's why I can't stand the haters of them, because there's a whole other dimension of this band. And, I mean, they really care about the soldiers and in our military and really are passionate about America. And Ivan did come out with an American flag and, you know, had some really good things to say about, you know, what the flag means and what they do with the troops and everything. And it's absolutely sincere. Then they had a bunch of kids, you know, brought up on stage from around the front row areas and things like that with their parents, of course, and brought them up on stage. And one of the little kids was dressed up like the drummer for Five Finger Death Punch, Jeremy. And Jeremy, they actually let him go behind the kid, his dad was there, and actually sit behind the kid and play it there.
And
I thought,
kid
what
play.
A cool thing. Yeah, the kid actually could
and
play.
And he was
drum.
Only probably about 5 or 6. He was little fella.
Yeah, maybe
and I'll tell you what,
he
rocked those drums out, man.
Yeah, he did. And but it was just, man, what a memory. He got to play in his you know, early heroes drum
set. His inspiration,
and,
man.
And so, I mean, they slowed the show down and brought these kids on stage and talked about, you know, the importance of, you know, little kids and everything and the future generation of metal fans. And it's kind of cool because, you know, heavy metal is a multi-generational genre, you know, and then you go to a concert, you see people who are elderly, you see people who are tiny kids, you see everything in between, you know. It's a really, it's great, great how heavy metal brings all ages, genders, religions. I mean, it doesn't see ethnicity. I mean, it's such a, that's why I'm passionate about metal and hard rock. I mean, it really is an amazing kind of communion whenever they all come together. And seeing Chris on stage last night was just awesome. I mean, he's easy to root for because he has not forgotten his foundations. He still stays in touch with the people he knew back in Lexington. I can vouch for that, as a matter of fact, directly. He hasn't forgotten his roots, definitely. He's a really good guy, and we had a really good time. It was and that's part of the creative world, you know, the musicians, you know, their art, their writing, songwriting, lyrics, everything about it.
And it's always it's neat to see someone that you knew that was just starting out and actually see them come to a point where they're playing Rupp Arena, you know, and filling seats. And it's just amazing, you know, to see a creative that you know, make it to that level. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, but
so
great
it does
show.
Happen, people. It does happen.
If you're out there, don't miss this tour, though, because, I mean, I'm telling you, all four bands are, I mean, they put on headlining quality sets, all four of them did, and amazing. I mean, amazing show, and just so great. And we had a surprise, Jerome Sayers, my man, who's a great comic book artist who actually did some Raiden Valkyrie concept art, happened to be at the show, and he figured out where we were and stopped by to say hi, and Holly got to meet him in person, I think, for the first time. And
Well, I told him to look for the hair because he's wondering where we were sitting. And I said, Jerome, just look for the hair. And he goes, yeah, it is a defining characteristic. I said, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Look for the hair.
Yes, we got to visit with him, and that was super, super cool. Good time was had by all, but yeah, it's neat to see creatives who, you know, stick to their guns and their dream and who hit the, hit the heights, you know, because there's definitely, I mean, he's definitely on top of the world, you know, with, I mean, those guys.
We have a wonderful guest that's hanging on the phone line there.
I see him.
He's a wonderful creative, and wait till you hear what, you know, what all's going on with him right now.
Well, we'll hold him in suspense for – no, just kidding. tonight we're actually going to take a film – a little bit of a film kind of turn tonight, which is going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, we're going to talk about all things filmmaking and indie film related. And, yes, our guest tonight actually I guess until we give his name here, I guess Holly might want to make a few comments about him, because he's definitely one of the Imaginarium alumni. That's where we got to know him a bit. So you want to give a quick backstory and before we bring him on here, so get our audience a little warmed up.
It you want me to tell who it is?
Sure. Well, you already started.
It's Mr. Jay Wellen, and then he's being very patient there and hanging on the phone. Jay is wonderful. He makes independent film, and he's just got one that got picked up for distribution that he's going to talk about. He's always working on a project. He also filmed – he was the camera guy for Turn 4 for the Kentucky Derby. So, he's one of those secret little people, you know, that sit up in the, you know, in the little booths and, make it possible so you could see – the Kentucky Derby. So
he doesn't
gets
have to justify himself
for that.
Right in there.
Oh dear.
Justify is the horse that won the Kentucky Derby. And coincidentally, I might add, Justify was slot position 7 and the Silks logo was a star. So yes, there was actually a 7-star Derby winner.
Woo!
Right. So let's hope that's a little connotation on your little omen sign, something like that. That was cool. But, yeah, without further ado, I want to bring aboard Jay Wellen. You are on the Star Chamber Show.
Yay.
We wish we'd have a prize to give you, but you're on the show.
Welcome,
well, first
Jay.
Off, Holly, Daniel, and Stephen, I just want to take a moment to thank you guys for having me on as a guest. It's a great pleasure and a great honor. There's a lot going on around the Kentucky, Indiana area as far as film is concerned, and it's great to be part of it. So really excited to see the Raiden project come out. You know, we have a lot of people in common that we work with in between, and that makes it really great. That builds our community. So that's very exciting, looking forward to it coming out. You have done some great work there, so I'm excited to see that. Always interested in getting more of the book stuff that you guys have coming out. I know that you guys do some great work with your press. Again, thank you so much for having me on. Whatever questions you've got for me, whatever I can tell you about, fire away.
Well, Holly and I are hard of hearing tonight. It's Five Finger Death Punch's fault. It's their fault. blame my old friend Chris Kale. It's his fault. But it's...
I'll ask the first simple question.
But we're ready, man.
I'll ask the first simple question. How do I take Knife's Tale from a book to a being on the screen?
First thing you got to do is adapt it to a script.
Right away.
adapt it to a script. Yep. That's the first thing you got to do is find yourself somebody to work with and adapt it to a script and realize how much, you know, with book writing, it's a little bit different than film with, as far as exposition is concerned. And, you have that narrative aspect with book writing where you don't have that with film. You've got to move it along or people get bored or it's just a bunch of fluff that people can't keep up with or, won't keep their interest.
That's why people always say the book is better than the movie. Well, you know what? You can't put everything into the movie, you know?
No.
People don't realize that.
Not at all. And the same thing with movies. You know, you get into it and you shoot footage and you realize the pacing doesn't work or it's not really usable for what you're doing. In fact, one of my latest projects I'm working on right now, I had to cut a full 3 minutes out of it. of the Final Cut, because I just feel like it slowed down the pacing. I didn't need that much exposition, that much backstory, and I already had enough of it there just to be able to jump straight into the action and take the audience into the story and let them enjoy the journey of it unfolding for everybody.
Right.
And that's the biggest
sometimes,
thing is,
like you said, you don't see that until you actually visually, you know, post-production or whatever, you actually see it. And you're like,
oh, yeah,
I can get rid of that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And sometimes sequencing, you know, you may, if you can change the sequence order of scenes around, that will also help, you know, with the story. But adapting a book to a screenplay is a whole different beast. It really is. I have a great group of writers that I work with. Tom Ricks, Sheridan Hall, which you guys know. He's come on as one of my writers on my newest project called Uprising, which we'll be filming in August. He's doing our major dialogue, Rick Schmeltz, and also Harley Morris. He's taking care of the script doctor for us. Yep.
I talked to Harley earlier.
Yes, we just announced
Harley today for Imaginarium, as a matter of fact. We just put out his page and photo and all that today. So good timing.
Yes, he will be there as part of our contingent. He will be there to talk about what he's been doing with us over the last year, almost a year and a half now. We've been together as partners in crime. Very pleased with his work. He's done some great set photography, helped with the script. In fact, the project we showed at Imaginarium last year, he and I wrote. He did a great job putting that together for us. So, again, I got a great team on the writing side, and that's what, you know, the longest time for me was, how do we get better at this? Well, the first thing we need to do is we got to let Jay stop writing the script and just let him do the story, and we got to find us some script writers. And I've got a good core group of writers. They're stretched out from Florida to Iowa to Indiana, and Facebook is the best way to keep everything flowing. And in fact, I just spent, as you noted earlier, I was working at Churchill for Derby. It was a 17-day stretch for me. I didn't have a lot of time to be able to work with my writers or work on any other projects that I've got in the fire right now. And I turned around and said, all right, guys, I've got availability. I'm going to have to crack the whip on you guys. I'm ready for this second act to come out so we can start getting, no script, no movie. We don't get paid for distribution. So that's where we're at now. In fact, speaking of distribution, we went ahead and we signed with Open Sign Entertainment out of Northern Indiana. It's a 5-year deal. It's a really good deal. We're very happy with it. And what we're going to do is they're picking up our last three projects, and we will be providing them with a total of 15 projects over the next 5 years. And so we're putting together the core group of people, and it's a project called the Sentinel Chronicles, and it's got a rich history. Started about 10 years ago in Atlanta. It's just grown exponentially with the talent that both behind and in front of the camera that we've gotten involved in the last 2 years. Very proud of it. I mean, some absolutely excellent people that have been involved in. Eric Kyer, for example, did audio for Prelude to Darkness that we showed at Imaginarium last year.
We love Eric. Eric was in our pilot, actually. He's helping us with the
post-production.
So, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, Eric is guest of Imaginarium, too. You'll see him there as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. It's got this alumni thing going on. And that's the great thing about filmmaking, especially when you can keep that community together. And there's so many of us that keep that together. And then we can build and we can help one another in the experiences. You know, not everybody has the big toy or, you know, the super nice camera. So being able to kind of talk and work together, and that's how you build community and make things better is by strengthening that community. So that is fantastic. John Stopman, another Angela, Ramsey Robinson, also another.
Yep.
She's coming back to.
Yeah. Super.
Clark Spalding has signed on as our lead character, which is a clone. So I feel like every time I get together with him, all I'm doing is killing him. You know, we've killed him about a dozen times in the last year. Can I blow him up? Can I burn him up? Can I throw him off a building? What are we doing next? You know, and he's just absolutely amazing. I can't say enough about that young man. And again, like I said, with the writing staff, you know, Harley, Sheridan Hall, Rick Schmeltz, and Thomas Ricks. These are some fantastic guys to work with. My production crew, my director of photography, he's just an amazing secret right now. He's off on a special assignment in Baltimore, but he's David Rogers. He's just absolutely incredible. He gets lighting, he gets camera moving. He and I've been together for about 4 years working on stuff, and he's just super talented. Our audio guy from Atlanta is coming up. His name is Derek Shine, to be involved in this project for the next 5 years. And we're looking forward to being able to have some promotional stuff to put out. In fact, talk with you guys a little bit about, you know, I think someone, you know, John Stopman's going to make an appearance at the Imaginarium, work out some promotional stuff. We'll also be at Geek Out next month. Not that I wanted to advertise somebody else's convention because I know how bad that is, but I'm just saying, stepping into the convention.
No, we love other conventions, yeah.
Right. I'm still unclear on how that works, and I don't want to offend anybody because I've heard stories about that. But, again, it's a new territory, and it's exciting to be able to – have promotional material soon, DVDs and Blu-rays. And I said, you know, if
right.
we get through life and, you know, the biggest achievement we've got is we're walking through Walmart and we've got a DVD over in the $5 bin, then we've done something. We can die happy. And,
right.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of where it's at. So we're all very excited about it. And, this is just another, you know, another good time. You know, you're talking about being on turn four at Churchill. When they showed that opening scene when the horses are coming down the track to go to the starting gate, yep, that was my frame, and it was a
Yay!
Great honor to be able to do that. It's
exactly.
a great honor to get to do that. Yeah, and this is just another great honor to be able to talk with you guys. And again, I loved Imaginarium. I look forward to being there this fall, and hopefully being able to show some more stuff. Right now, we've got I've been able to get back in the studio. I haven't touched anything in here for almost 3 weeks, and I've got a zombie project, a zombie comedy called Undead from Space, and it's kind of really an homage to the original Return of the Living Dead from the 80s, and it's got John Stopman in it, and Harley's in it. He's playing the president, and got a lovely Dawn Fisk out of Lexington. She's involved in it. Let's see, who else is it? Clark's in it, and Chauncey Arnold's in it. Just some super talented people that were involved in it. And we're going to come back. What we're doing is putting together the proof of concept, and we're going to come back and finish it up in July, the first weekend in July, before or right after 4th of July. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, we're looking forward to getting back into that. And then in August, we film Uprising, the next Sentinel project. And right now we have 371 that we're tying up the edit with on that. In fact, we screened that Sunday night. We had our after derby party and had everybody here. And in fact, tonight we had Harley over for a little meeting and Clark for a little meeting to kind of screen the project and have a little bite to eat before I came on the show with you guys. But again, it's such a pleasure being able to talk to you guys. Thank you.
Well, thank
you're
you.
Welcome. You're welcome, Jay.
No problem.
Another question real quick.
Go for it.
For people that think that it's, you know, a quick and easy thing to do to do these movies and get somebody to sponsor them and stuff like that, because there's idiots out there that think this.
Yes, they do.
How long have you been working on the project before you got somebody to say, yes, I want 15 projects from you?
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah, 10 years.
So you just got started. Okay, I was just wondering.
Yeah. And it is definitely a commitment to cause. It is many hours. It is stress on marriages and friendships. It is not for, if everybody could do it, I'm also a retired executive chef. If everybody could be a chef, if everybody could be a filmmaker, they would. And it's not, it's hours,
exactly.
It's hours and hours. And I don't mean just
grueling,
10 or 15,
grueling.
Thousands, tens of thousands of hours that are involved behind the scenes and on set and then in post-production. You know, I tried to, the formula I was taught was for every minute that you see on screen, go ahead, and this is with a relatively simple project, go ahead and anticipate 10 hours of pre-production, production, and post-production for that 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a simple project. That's no, you know, no stunts, no nothing crazy, no crazy astronaut walking in space kind of stuff. This is just a simple, you know, sitcom, you know, rom-com project, basic lighting. You're looking at 10 hours for every minute. And unless you're willing to make that commitment, then this is not what you want to do. And it's also, it's not cheap. It really isn't. Depending on what you're doing and what you're involved with, you know, it could be, you know, it could be up to $20,000-$30,000, and that's just getting into it. That's just getting your camera equipment, your lighting equipment, your audio equipment, and then if you need wardrobe and props, you know, you're looking at, again, an easy $30,000 to start out to be independent, because if you're not, you fall at the whim of other people. And, you know, if you're lucky, you can fall in with a good community where we support one another, but if you're unlucky, it's not the same. In Atlanta, because it was so large, you know, if I relied upon a camera guy that lived on the other side of the city, well, the other side of the city is literally 4 hours away. You know, we're talking about 15 counties and 20 million people we got to fight through. So, you know, it became very advantageous to control all of my own resources, and I've been fiercely independent ever since. And now living in Louisville, it's a little bit smaller, and having all of my, you know, controlling all my own resources makes it easier to be able to put things together quickly. We still like to do a lot of pre-production. When we did Prelude, we actually spent 16 weeks putting Prelude together. We filmed it in 3 days, and it was lightning fast in post-production, actually 5 weeks that we had
nice.
Completed. But that's still a 21. That's still a 21-week commitment. In fact, the Project 371 is a diary on Facebook right now. I try to keep everybody updated going through the process of drafting the story, building the screenplay, getting the production Bible, casting, doing wardrobing and costuming, rehearsals, production, post-production, where you're at, you know, your first, your rough cut, your second rough cut, your all these things. And we started that back in January, the beginning of January, and here it is. Almost the middle of May, and it's still not complete. But again, it's a very delicate project. It's story driven, but it also has a lot of effects. And trying to get all of those done correctly, it takes time. And again, as a filmmaker, you have to spend time with your family. You've got to spend time with your friends, and a lot of times those friends are the same people that you work with on set. And sometimes you got to put the camera down. Sometimes you got to put the script down. And you got to have a beer with them. You got to have, you got to break bread with them and just, talk about them and leave filmmaking alone for a little while. But it's hard. But if you want to make it, you have to be driven. You can't. There is no middle ground. And that's, I think, the hardest, hardest part for a lot of people is they get into it and they get the money wrapped up into it, or they start seeing, okay, well, I've already got $5,000-$10,000 wrapped up into this. I'm, buried up to debt on my credit card. I've spent 5 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years trying to do this, and it's cost me a marriage, it's cost me friendships, and they quit. And it's perseverance, it's doing it over and over again, it's
yep.
shoot, edit, repeat to get to learn how to do it. And it's finding the people around you that love what you do and building a culture that is supportive. And people want to come
tribe.
Back because
the tribe.
Yeah. You yep. cannot, you cannot be, you can, you know, you, you're not going to be a, you're not going to be a successful filmmaker if you don't have the right people with you doing the right things. And you have to create a
right.
culture to where people want to come back. If you, just like anything else that's successful, repeat business. If you want to make good stuff, if you want to grow and evolve, you've got to make it so that people want to come back. And
right.
that's, my biggest things I can tell people, getting into it is, find the people that you can work with, build those friendships, build those collaborations, understand the dedication. But at the same time, you've got to balance, you've got to balance your life. Because if you don't, you're going to wake up one day and sure, you might have, the little gold guy on your mantle, but there's not going to be anybody else around there to share it with. And that's the most important thing. I have a great, absolutely great wife who's my executive producer who has been with me when we first moved to Louisville. She referred to it as kissing frogs, and we kissed a lot of frogs when we first got here trying to put a cast and crew members together. And really in the last 2 years, and really hardcore in the last year, we have put together some of the finest some of the finest people in the area to work with. And you guys know them, we share them between us, and these are
right.
and this is what's made it all happen. And, proof is in the pudding. We're sitting here having this conversation, distribution deal, having the honor of being in the tower over Turn 4 at Churchill Downs. This is all, it's you got to work to get there. You just don't wake up one day with, a distribution deal and, several films that have been screened at film festivals. It takes time, and you have to stick with it.
That's right. It is perseverance. I say that over and over all the time. I tell people, if you want to make this your life's work or your life's, it's perseverance. I cannot
yeah.
emphasize that enough. You can't just say,
oh, I'm going to, you know, write this screenplay or this book or make this painting and I'm going to make it overnight. No, you're not. It's a one in a million shot in the dark. Probably one in a billion
it's not,
now to
it's
do
not
that.
Impossible,
you know,
it's
you're
very
gonna,
it's improbable, yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, now it's you're going to have to put, you know, like Stephen calls it, sweat equity. You know, you're going to have to put time into it. You're going to have to put, it's work. It is work. A lot of
yes.
work and perseverance. Yes, it is. It is very much.
Oh,
so.
Yes. I just had a major rant on Facebook about that fact. I get so
yes.
tired of it when people, oh, you're into filmmaking or you're into writing books. Oh, that's so.
Yeah,
so
they
awesome.
Think we just
Let's
sitting
just
around twiddling our thumbs.
What,
you know?
What a nice hobby. How glamorous. So that, you know, oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah,
no,
if you're
no,
really
no.
going for it. And let me tell you, it's not the party you think it is, but oh my
no,
God.
No. As a working filmmaker,
well,
it's
like
I mean,
any other business. If you've got a business that you're running and everything,
right.
if you don't put all of it into it, then the business is going to die. Making a movie, writing a book, doing conventions, anything like that, mm-hmm. if you're not putting yourself into it, plan on dying. On that, that
right.
because
agreed.
It's not
and, again,
gonna
and again, if you can be so fortunate as to get work in the same field as your hobby, if you want to call it that, and I, mm-hmm. you know, now that I've transitioned to having distribution, it's not really a hobby anymore. This is also my
no.
job.
Oh,
you
I
know,
cringe
I'm,
at that.
I'm making this...
Oh, I cringe at that.
yeah, I do too. I, you know, the thing for me is that the majority where I get, you know, I get paid to run a camera is in sports, and I have absolutely
yeah.
no. I could care less about basketball. I could care less about baseball. I could care less about horse racing. But you know what? That's what helps pay my bills. That's what feeds my family. That's what funds these projects until now. I finally, and we're really hoping with this distribution deal to turn that corner to where it now pays for itself. Because it's, again, and you guys know, because you know, you made Raiden out of pocket. It's not cheap, you know. It's a
no.
gamble. It doesn't, you may not get anything back for it, but if you do, it makes
right.
it even better. But the fact of the matter is you made it, and that's another thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, use it like an iceberg metaphor. Is like what you see above water are the number of films that actually
mm-hmm.
get, you know, that make it through from beginning to end. The ones below the water mm-hmm. are the ones you never see, the ones that haven't. And these are even ones, you know, big movies out in Hollywood that, you know, have budgets and
sure.
stuff. The
right.
success, the failure factor on independent film is incredible. You have, you know, egos and personalities that stop these things in their tracks. You know, I've heard all kinds of horror stories where, you know, one guy gets into it with another guy and now he's got the footage and won't give it to him. Well, he doesn't know how to edit.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know.
I've heard it many times.
Just shuts things.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
I can't fathom that. And that's one thing that people have always said about me is no matter what, no matter how good or bad the project, and again, I use that loosely because I don't think there's such a thing as a good or bad project. I think that they all have to be evaluated, but I always finish what I start. But
right.
again, I think that's with filmmakers, it's not a matter if it's good or bad. It's a matter of what were they up against? What did they have? Did they have a sound
mm-hmm.
guy? Did they have decent audio? What kind of camera were they working with? What experience did they have? Were they using Windows Movie Maker or did they have Premiere? You know, what kind of actors were they working with? You know, did they have plastic
mm-hmm.
props from Walmart or did they have, you know, you know, higher and stuff? What did they have? And these are all the things. And I think that, especially from a consumer standpoint is understanding that, that
mm-hmm.
story behind the movie. That is the real thing about a movie is what was the story behind it? What was, what made this possible and what was it like during production? And, you know, what all did it take to get it done? And what was the,
right.
you know, the filmmaker up against? And I think that's something we as filmmakers need to appreciate more with other filmmakers that are out there is that, you know, especially from those that don't live in larger metropolitan areas where they have access to, you know, large communities of filmmakers that they can learn from or they can work with, you know, when you've got a kid off in the middle of nowhere just watching YouTube tutorials and he's, you know, playing with his dad's old handy cam and that's where he's starting out. And, you know, and he wants to jump in and people, you know, kind of want to snub their nose at him when, you know, you never know. That could be the next Spielberg. All we need to do is bring him in
right.
and show him,
mm-hmm.
you know, show him some tricks and embrace him and not shun him because he doesn't have the best toys. And I think that's another thing, you know, in filmmaking, like writing or anything else, art, Again, all goes back to perseverance, and there's no such thing as bad art, bad writing. It's just a matter of polishing it and getting and going through the growth and understanding the torture that we as artists have to go through in the creation process. And I think that we need to, we as a community as a whole need to take that into account when we look at other people's work and not necessarily judge it, but evaluate it either, but just kind of go, okay, what can we do to kind of help this person, or what's the story behind how this got here? So,
right.
And those are my thoughts on that. Yeah. Because it's not easy. If it were easy, everybody would do it.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, you know,
and
for me, I'm very, you know, and it's the people that you do it with. You know, you don't, mm-hmm. this is a team sport. This is not an individual thing. This requires
no.
a lot of people and everybody
glad
doing
the village.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. It does. And sometimes those villages can be super interesting. Let me tell you. Really great things. Some really great things going on when you do four or five pictures with somebody and you're putting prosthetics on them and covering them in blood and they keep coming back. You got to ask yourself, they must really like you.
to put up with all this, they must really like me as a person.
Yep.
They still
talk to you after the production's done. Yes, they do like
yes,
you.
that's another thing too. I mean, I'd stopped filmmaking for about 3 years, and I came back and I did my first one here in Kentucky, and this was right before my daughter was born in 2014, and we were on location in Lawrenceburg, and I told our lead actress, I said, you know, there's going to be a 4-day shoot, and I said, by the end of these 4 days, you're going to want to kill me. And yeah, she did. And she did. She was, I had her running up and down a hill across from the Wild Turkey Distillery, and she just had had enough. And I was like, you know, I've been up and down this hill too. And my director of photography, and you know what, we've been, you know, mosquitoes have gotten us in our underside. You know, we're not having a good time here either, honey. My wife actually prevented my death on that one. We had a green screen cloth with us out there in the field, and she's like, I think I need you to get that for me. Huh? What? Okay, let me get that. And apparently it stopped me from getting further involved in a confrontation with that young actress. But I told her, I said, by the end of it, oh, this is so much fun. I said, yeah, well, you wait till day four. You're gonna hate me. But after it's all said and done, and you come back and you do your premieres and your screenings and you have your, you know, your cast and crew parties, most of that usually falls away and the love
right.
comes back.
Yeah.
And not that it ever really went anywhere, but it's tense, you know, and you've got to,
right.
you know, especially on tight budgets, you've got limited, you know, you got a limited schedule, you know, one of your actors might actually, you know, he couldn't afford to take off work. So he's coming straight from work, hopping into wardrobe, doing, you know, a 12, 13
yep.
hour
mm-hmm.
day. On a project, and he's had no sleep, you know, and a lot of things, you know, again, this is that's the real story in filmmaking is what did it take to make it? Who did it, you know, and I think that's the most important thing is we as filmmakers need to, you know, when we sit down and we talk about what we're doing, not the statues that we win or anything like that, but, just the great war stories that we have, and they're not war. It's just the process of getting to the final cut. And being able to share that especially when we have those common, you know, those common actors between us and just talking about, it was so great. He was, you know, he or she did this on my set and oh God, it
mm-hmm.
was great. You know, whatever. And that's so much fun to share those stories as filmmakers.
Oh yes. That's true. And then also the people have stepped forward to become heroes during the production that, you know, things that you never saw, you know, coming, where someone stepped up to do, you know, this with maybe provide you with an alternate location, maybe, you know, somebody had dived in when somebody else, you know, fell, you know, quit or let you down, and somebody else steps up to fill that part in the production team or, you know, or even cast.
Sometimes it's totally unexpected. You're
emerge.
Like, whoa.
Yeah,
oh,
how
yeah.
many heroes
without,
emerge in a production. It's,
yeah.
it's really crazy how that
with
the dynamic
without,
happens.
That is very true. You know, I've learned over time that I don't like to, you know, double duty people because it burns them out and they're spread
right.
too thin. And so I've gotten really good about not doing that. But you know, I've got actors who have smaller parts and they're like, man, come on, man, I'll hold the boom for you. I'll do whatever.
Right.
You know. And it, you know, it's not their, you know, they're not scheduled to be on set, you know, doing their role. So they wind up doing, you know, production or PAs or whatever. And they're just fantastic. In fact, we were just talking about that earlier about how, we were, working on Prelude, and Clark was there, and I looked around, and I said, "You're not scheduled to be on this set right now. Why are you?" He's like, "I just wanted to come and help, man." I'm like, "Okay,
right,
cool,
yeah,
thanks."
I know. It's like, yeah, we'll take it.
Yeah. And when you find people like that, those are the ones you hold on to, especially if you're
yeah.
going to stay consistent in filmmaking. If you just want to cross that off your bucket list, it's a little bit different. But when you're trying to build a constant team of people to work with, when you find those
mm-hmm.
those heroes like you're talking about, they're Sheridan. Sheridan's another fine example of that. In fact,
yep.
he's
oh,
out
yeah.
in Iowa right now. And he came
yeah.
on and worked on Prelude, or not Prelude, but Impossibility of Reason. It was his first project with me. He did a great job. Worked on another project with me and was just spot on. And he's out there, and I'm like, "Hey, I know you like to write, and you're kind of out of the loop right now, and you're part of the family. You want to help with it?" He's like, "Yeah, sure." So he's really stepped up and doing a great job with dialogue on Uprising, and I can't say enough about that young man. He's really, really got a lot going on, he's got a lot of potential. And again, it's a matter of people around him giving him the opportunity and wanting to believe in him. And
right.
I have a lot of belief in that young man.
Yeah, he.
See, Holly,
he ended
good.
Up.
It's a good thing
gosh,
he resurrected
he did all kinds
him
of
after
stuff
Brock killed him. It's a good thing
yeah.
after Brock killed him.
He was
we
resurrected.
Him.
Yeah,
poor
we
Jay.
Killed him
good
on set,
Jay.
And then he helped with the he helped with the props and weapons, and
yeah.
he you
oh,
know
man,
helped take
yeah,
care of
awesome.
Them and clean them and keep them kept and every day and yeah do PA stuff. I mean anywhere we needed him, Sheridan's like, "Here, I'll do something. I'll help." You know. Yeah, he was
yeah,
right
neither
there.
Confirm nor deny that he gets skewered very, very well on screen by Brock O'Hearn.
I've blown him up.
Yeah, see, poor guy. We do all kinds of
dies,
terrible things to him, but he still keeps coming back.
Dies,
so.
Yes, he dies well.
Oh, man, yeah.
He definitely dies well.
Yeah,
we love Sheridan. Yeah, definitely. Oh, man.
Hey, Jay, got another question for you. How did being an EC prepare you to be a director and production man?
Well, hold on before you answer
that,
Jay. But you being an EC, I'm going to say it now. Star Chamber Show, the culinary edition with Daniel and Jay. It's got to happen.
Oh my gosh!
I would love that. I would love that. I miss the kitchen. I don't miss
oh,
the pain
man.
Of it though. But I would love to. I would love to do anything culinary
yeah.
related that I don't have to actually go back to work and put on the coat, other than honorific purposes.
Yeah. Well, that's an interruption.
The,
go ahead, tackle his question now.
the background. I come from an Army background, So they kind of, and I come from a military family, so I kind of have the process of putting things together. And working in a kitchen is the same thing. It's just you're instead of building a plate, you're building a movie. And things have to go into it: the preparation, the planning, the execution, people doing the right jobs at the right time, and presentation. These are all things, and I like to think that being a filmmaker and having been an executive chef, also makes me a better father.
Yeah.
I have to learn patience because a lot of the times on set, and I'm nothing. And if any of the talent that I work with are listening to me right now, please don't get mad at me. But sometimes it's like having kids on set. A little story about Impossibility. We're on set. It is. You got to tell them what they're
yep.
doing. You got to give them their motivation. My AC and my set photographer decided to pull a mean prank on Sheridan, and I was in on it, right? And we set him up for a landmine, and he said something, and I looked at him, and I all serious in my best, Gordon Ramsay, Arlie Ermey drill sergeant look, and I said, "Are you lost, boy? Do you not know where you're at?" And he's like, "Ooh, ooh." And the AC and then the photographer.
Well, he has a military background, so he probably kicked in the mode right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, being an executive chef, having been an executive chef, in fact, for a long time, I did both. I was an executive chef and a filmmaker, which was a kind of a weird competing career, having competing careers like that. But it really, it's attention to detail. It's dedication. It's the long hours that you have to put into it. It's preparation. It's, understanding and treating your crew right, understanding what motivates people to be there. All these are just basic good leadership skills that you have to have if you're going to be a filmmaker and do positive things and keep people around with you that want to go on to continue to work with you and continue to make stuff. And even if the relationship doesn't work necessarily out between you and them, you don't want to sour them on filmmaking. Because not everybody's everybody's cup of tea, but you don't want them to not, you know, be part of the film community. You don't want them not to be acting in other people's projects. You don't want them to be working on, you know, you don't want that to stop. You never want to discourage that. So, you know, it's finding that balance and doing the right things by people and motivating them properly and caring for them.
Right.
And, you know, making sure that you're planning, you know, take the time, you know, you don't want to get out to the middle of nowhere. And, you know, and we both know this, don't want to get out, and especially you guys, cause you did it. I'm lucky enough that some of my locations are not too far from the studio. And if something goes wrong, you want to know about it before you go. So you go out and you test and you rehearse. And these are all things that you learn from the kitchen is, you know, you go through prep, you know, you do your preparation and, you know what you need to do to get this pushed out on time. And, you train for that. And those are the most important things, I think, that carry over from being an executive chef or even a soldier as well, is to make sure that you know that preparation and instill that in your people so that when you get out there, you don't fall apart and people are, you know, breaking down on you. And, you know, it's when you lose morale, when you lose faith, that's when a project falls apart and there's nothing else you can really do. You just have to you know, grit your teeth and get through it. And, you know, it goes back to what earlier. If everybody could do it, they would. And,
that's right.
It takes tough people to do this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, and the obvious thing is feeding them.
Mise en place.
Yes, exact. He's on sin. It's the same thing. Knowing what you're doing, doing your mise en scene, same thing. Mise en place in the kitchen, mise en scene on set. You know, these are both very important things. Having your prep, you know, thinking it through, camera movement, camera motion, rehearsals, costume and wardrobe. And you guys definitely appreciate that with Raiden. You know, going back to the going back to the Viking days, back to the medieval days, is a little bit different than going to the post-apocalypse. I can just throw you in some torn up uniforms and give you some, you know, some airsoft guns and call it a day. You guys, you got swords and body armor and all kinds of crazy stuff, man. What if it doesn't work? What if if we went cheap, it's going to fall off. Oh, we can't do paper mache with that.
We had to order them suckers, the weapons and all that stuff. Yeah. You can't use, you know, dollar store stuff and Walmart stuff.
No.
Yeah, we couldn't have got by with all that, you know. We had to, you know, find places that actually had the real stuff. And then we didn't want it. You didn't want something that was sharp so, you know, people could slice each other up for real. So, you know, we had to find a theater company that actually rents this to production studios and theaters and that were blunt, you know, so we didn't have actors cutting themselves up.
Fastest way to get something broke, give it to an actor. Fastest way to hurt an actor, give them the real thing.
Make it look real, but you know, there's a fine line there. You got to be careful. Got to be real careful.
I don't know how often I have a cast member. Hey man, I've got a machete in the truck. I'm like, no, keep it in the truck. Look at this real gun. Man, get that real gun out of here. You know, and that's, you know, part of, you know, when we did Prelude, one of the things we did for our cast was getting, you know, we had a training seminar with Plays of Swords out of Cincinnati, and they're some good friends of mine, Maria DeHoff and her husband, and they came up and they did about a 5-hour training seminar where they, you know, taught them some basic stage combat moves, how to handle weapons, and, you know, how to, you know, basic safety things that they needed to know so that when we were filming, and of course, you know, you always take, you know, you always do the, you know, your due diligence, you inform law enforcement and if there are any businesses around and neighbor, you know, anybody around what you're doing so that there isn't a cop assisted suicide. Cause that's the last thing you want to do is for somebody to get hurt. We've heard of a couple of incidences as of late. There was an episode up in Indiana where they, you know, all they had to do was make a phone call, and it, you know, they would have prevented almost it was a near tragedy with one of the projects being filmed up there. And it's all you've got to do is a well-placed email or a well-placed phone call. And then, you know, there are a lot of people, and some of them are, you know, certified. They're members of the, I think it's the Stage and Combat Directors Guild or whatever it is. And they'll come out for,
right.
you know, a nominal fee. They'll, you know, they'll teach your actors what you need to do. Maybe even act as an advisor for a couple hundred, or even if you don't want to go that route, you can get yourself an off-duty police officer for a couple $100, and you don't have to worry about any of those things going wrong. But again, like I said, the fastest way to get something broken, give it to an actor. They will break something in a heartbeat.
They'll break something or rip an outfit. Lord, they like to tear up those outfits.
Yes, they do. I'm like, oh, come on.
Costuming
man,
is tough.
Yes, it is. Well, and then, you know,
I have to,
let me tell you, Texas dirt, man. We still got Texas dirt in one of our cars from Prelude. My wife is still not forgiving me for that.
It's on the wall over here in the house.
I'm like, oh, man. Why can't we
our
just costume
regular designer, our main costume designer just found another tote today in his stuff of unwashed outfits, and he said it was like releasing the Draugr, you know, one of our monsters.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess it was pretty rough.
Poor
Timothy.
Well, speaking of adventures with the Draugr, we have a very special caller I need to bring in at this point with
Uh-oh.
About 30 minutes left in the show. And Jay is going to know this caller, so I'll leave it as a little bit of a surprise, except when I mention his name, of course. But this is the one, the only, writer extraordinaire, Sheridan Hall, who is on the air. Welcome to the Star Chamber Show. You're with Jay.
Hey, Jay, what's up, man?
Hi, Sheridan.
Hey, what's up, little brother? How you doing? Not much, man. Not much. Just living the dream. Hoping I wake up soon.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. I hear you.
Surprise, surprise. We had a little surprise for Jay tonight.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate that. I just talked to him earlier. We had a great conversation about the script writing thing going on.
Awesome.
We don't have a movie. We ain't getting paid.
Exactly. And communication, this is a family event. It's like a marriage. If you don't communicate, it goes to crap. So
that's it. You have to keep the lines of communication open.
Exactly. So, but yeah, Jay, it's great to hear you, and great to hear actually be on the air with the two groups of people that actually helped me in both writing and in filmmaking get ahead. So.
There you go.
It's good to have
you. There you go.
Yeah, we are going to have you as a guest yourself on the show. Don't worry. But, yeah, we're thrilled that you could join us tonight to surprise Jay. That is awesome. So.
Yes. Yes.
It's a gift. We just sent messages back and forth earlier. It's great. And he's a great member of my family. He's a great member of my team. I'm very excited to be able to say, hey, you can write. I think, how did I approach it? You're a writer, right?
Yeah,
you want to get
well.
I think
what it was I was talking about as you were talking about because I did tune in just at the right spot when you guys were telling both horror stories and glory stories with my name attached. But it's like there really is a talent agency up here. I tried to hook up with, but didn't fall through. Like they said over here in Iowa, it's like trying to get into film and acting and modeling here in Iowa is like trying to get into snowboarding in Florida. It ain't going to happen. So, so Jay, yeah, you told me because, you know, I wanted to get, I was fiending for something. And one of the great things that Jay does, among other things, is that he takes those who are really taking it seriously, taking this as something, like I said, to be taken seriously, and Jay
right.
took me under his wing right after Raiden. He actually reached out to me because of pictures from Raiden. And he says, pick two things that you're going to want to excel at. And I was already in with the Raiden crew because I knew Steven and Holly from Imaginarium and being a writer. And so Jay was like, dude, you write. just right for me. And we'll get you in whenever we can. So.
That's awesome, man. Yes.
And, you know, that was my guru gave me that advice, is that we can all do many things and wear many hats in filmmaking, but the thing that we are good at, we need to focus on, you know. As much as I, you know, am not happy about, or not happy, that's not right at all, I'm extremely happy to get to be able to run a camera and for someone to pay me to do it. But that's what I do, but I want to direct, I want to produce. And
exactly.
I don't have a complaint at all, and it's what I said to Sheridan. Sheridan, your passion is in writing. If you want to act, act too. If you want to make movies, work on crew, but write, and then let your secondary passion be acting. And I think that's the best advice that anybody can give one another in this. What do you do? What is your first best love? What are you most successful at? Where's your strongest talent? Go for it. Let that be your guiding star, and everything else that you do. If you have to be a boom op for your day job, be a boom op. That's fine. But your real passion, never let that go. And I was, I was totally thrilled when I asked him. I said, "Hey, do you want to write? Do you want to get paid to write?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "All right, I've got a project. I've got something coming."
I think I looked at my lady, and I was like, I even said that. I was like, "Is he really asking me this? Do I want to write? Is this what he's asking me?" So, but yeah, it's just to be, and then with the distribution deal that you announced on the show, Jay, it's just, I mean, this is anything farthest I could have dreamed of in that past 18 plus years that I've been writing, so.
Telling you, man, the day is coming where we're going to be in Walmart, we're going to look over into that $5 bin, one of our movies is going to be there.
Heck yeah,
that's right.
Man.
But, well, Jay, are you in your
families and stuff, I've got to go take care of a little 5-year-old who's obsessed and like, "Daddy, you're missing Jurassic World." So, last thing I would like to say before I leave with you guys is that just for anybody else who's listening, is it does, like you said, like it's the startup. I started off by bugging. I think I bugged the crap out of Steven. To be like, "Hey man, what do you need? What do you need? I want to do something. And it was at the LaGrange Book Fair or the authors thing, and we were like, "Okay, finally, I just need to give this kid something to do." And so, again, you may start off as a production assistant like I did, and then I got moved up to assistant props master, working on the swords and personalization of the scabbards and some costuming, and then here I am. Not even a year later, I was a speaking role in a film, and I have developed a Sean Bean complex where I think so far, because even in the most recent installment, I think I play somebody who dies in that too, Jay. So I have and in Raiden, I died twice, if I'm not mistaken. So
That's a talent right there. You keep coming back. It's amazing. That is, you need to share that.
Well, hang on just for a second, Sheridan. Don't leave yet, because I want to give the next person. I have another surprise for Jay, but it's somebody that you also know, and I want to give them a chance to say hi to you on the air before you bow out here. So I afraid you, the one and only, the man that can do a urination scene like no other, Eric here. He is on.
Eric.
My man!
That is going dead.
nice!
There it is.
Nice.
I am so excited. I'm so excited to hear what's been going on, man. I am thinking about you, Bob. I'm praying for you. I think you've got a lot of potential going on there, man. And definitely know that there's one guy in your corner, and he's shaved head and a beard. Oh, wait a minute. I'm not talking about Jay. I'm talking about me.
Shaved head, that explains half the people in our industry right now behind the camera. I think that's why we're behind the camera, because we're bald, right?
For sure, for sure.
Oh, we have Eric on the camera.
Thank you so much, Eric. And Eric, when I first met you, it was on Raiden, and the first time I saw you, you had the eyeliner on, and I was like, "Okay, this guy's quiet. Eyeliner on. Are you just growing out of your goth phase. I don't know what's going on here, but
thank
you so much.
Eric. Vikings actually historically wore eyeliner, so he was actually historically
the war paint.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm a rock star from the 80s. I just could never get out of that phase, so yeah.
It gave me better reason to bring it back out. Yeah.
So, but well, it's great to catch up with you guys. And Eric, thank you so much. And Jay, I will be definitely looking forward to talking with you some more tomorrow.
Indeed, we will talk tomorrow, brother.
All right, man.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk
all
to
right,
you later, Sarah. Bye.
Have a good night.
Later.
Well, I got very excited when I saw that Jay was going to be on the show tonight. You know, Jay gave me my first opportunity to do sci-fi, and because sometimes I never did, and he entrusted me with one of his biggest characters in his series, and which I was very honored to do. So I was pretty excited, man. I had to definitely listen in, because I'm off and on. On Wednesdays, listening anyway, but I definitely had to make sure I was listening tonight. You know, I have a lot of respect for Jay. He a lot of what Sheridan said is so true. I can attest to all that. Jay, to some people, Jay seems to be hard to work with, but he's not really hard to work with if you're somebody who wants to have excellence on the set.
Right.
And do what you can do now with what you got now, the best way you can do it, you know? And that's totally Andy. Jay is becoming an expert at it. So,
yes. You got it.
How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice.
That's it, man. That's it. And you've got to work with what you got, and we've learned Mr. Eric there. Mr. Eric is now helping him, like I said, with our post-production. He's helping with some sound
I've been
following that young man's career, and he just keeps getting better and better.
He's stellar.
He's actually, to be entirely honest, was my first pick for sound. I love my sound guy, Derek, out of Atlanta, but my first pick was Eric, but trying to catch up with him with everything he's got going on is impossible. I'm going to get him back. I'm going to steal him back, you know. So,
when I'm done scoring Angel, we're going to have a conversation. I got to get this score done. Then we're going to have a conversation, see what's happening with Chronicles.
Definitely. Definitely, we've got a beer to have and some catching up to do, because you've done some amazing work, and I'm very, very impressed and very proud.
That.
And again, it was an incredible honor to have had you on Sentinel on World's End that relaunched the whole thing. And I can't say enough. You know, I've always you're a pleasure to work with on set. You're a pleasure off camera, just hanging out as a brother. We've always stayed close and always stayed true to one another, which is sometimes hard in this business around here.
Mm-hmm. Sure. All right, well, listen, this show ain't about
beer, me. B-Y-R.
So, this is a really cool joke. It's not really saying my last name right, but I'm just going with it because it just fits so much better. So, Cheers is now spelled C-H-Y-R-S. That's how you spell it now.
Right. Yeah, we have a whole thing going on Twitter. Yeah, Eric and I got it stirred up on Twitter a bit.
Marvel.
You gotta make it
the
theme.
So it's gonna be a lot of hashtag cheers, CHYRS. It's gonna be a lot going on.
Before I wrap this up with you guys, I wanna say thank you for the opportunity. It was great. It was great to get to talk to Sheridan, great to talk to you guys. Great to talk to Eric, and I wanna send out a shout out to him and congratulate him for becoming a grandfather. Congratulations, Grandpa.
Yes. Congrats.
I couldn't figure that out.
Well,
it looks like he's like 30 years old. I was like, how the heck is he a grandfather?
Yeah, Steven's like, there's no way. And I said, yes.
He's like,
he's a grandfather. Well, I'm a grandmother. I have five. Well, almost five. One in the oven, but I got five.
That's number three. That's grandchild number three.
Grandchild number three. way.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on number three.
See, Eric, we found right. we found some fountain of youth somehow. We need to share this.
Yeah.
We need to share.
Yeah,
you know, it's a shame we keep it all
no
to
way.
Ourselves.
Yeah, I was like, no way. There's no way he's old enough to be a grandfather.
And then, well, you got Daniel. Daniel's over there. You know, he's like 200 years old now, and he's still looking good.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. And Daniel, anytime you want to do a culinary episode, I think Eric's got some culinary background. We ought to do a Daniel. Let's get together with Eric and do a culinary show.
Yeah,
oh, good.
Right. Hell yes.
200 year old.
How to cook.
Betty's got some
friends.
Great recipes. Betty's got some great recipes.
Daniel and I. Daniel and I can do a Muppet parody. We'll just be the old guys in the balcony.
Oh yeah!
Oh no!
Oh dear God!
So we'll see you at Imaginarium with Eric. Eric, you're going to be at Imaginarium, right?
Oh
yep,
yeah.
He's a guest.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
wow,
exactly.
I'm hoping to have my.
This is
going to
be a show.
Then, so.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll all be there.
Yes, we will. We'll have to get together and share stories and raise a glass.
Tasting bourbon.
So I will.
Yes, bourbon.
Yes. Bourbon.
No, we're going to debut Keir. No, we're going to debut Keir beer at Imaginary.
Keir beer.
No ease.
That's next.
All right.
See, this is what happens when you get a bunch of crazy creatives together. This is what happens. But it always stems great ideas. Now we've got the culinary project in the works. See?
Cheer beer.
Yeah.
Right.
Cheers.
Dude,
there you go.
See, Jay is experiencing the magic of the Star Chamber show for the first time here. And I guess
yes, I am. And I'm absolutely enjoying it, having an absolutely great time.
Yeah, we still got 13 minutes, believe it or not. So we're not done yet.
We're not done yet.
We're not done yet.
Oh, Lord.
Well,
Jay's ready to leave, huh? Okay.
Yeah, Jay's like, I need to get out of here.
He wants to make a hasty exit. He's like, oh, God. They got Eric here on the line. Oh, God. Get out of here.
Oh, I probably got to get out there and do some damage control. I'm probably in trouble with somebody for something I said.
Considering Jay's ex-culinary and everything, he's probably a good one for the bourbon panel.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Which will be at night this year, so we won't get in trouble.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it later. I'm gonna schedule it later, so I don't have the same repeat of last year.
Last year got
I had to
nappy.
Assist my moderator to the next panel, so that's not good.
Yes.
It had to be a bourbon.
Eric Jude's fault.
Yeah, it's Eric Jude's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that name, man.
Oh, Colonel.
Yeah, the Colonel brought some bourbon to the panel and was very generous in sharing it. let's just say our moderator was not quite ready for the next panel. That's all.
No, Holly had to assist him to the next panel and prop him up against the wall.
See, Jay, you got to come to see this panel. It's already legendary.
It is.
Oh,
there's right, so many people
booze,
on that
there's
panel.
Booze, I'm there. There's booze,
it
I
is,
am there.
Booze.
Oh, yeah.
Booze and books. Books and booze.
Yeah,
hey.
Everybody wants to be on it this year after that. I mean, we've had more people
I can
be on that panel.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, we're going to have audience participation this year.
Yeah.
Considering I'm not allowed to drink hard liquor right now, they've got me as being moderator, so.
Yeah, Daniel's the moderator. I made him moderator.
I think you're getting cheated.
Yeah, under normal circumstances.
Well, his blood's a little too thin. He can't be drinking a lot.
Yeah, old Jack the Ripper there is Jack Daniels. I'm telling you.
Yeah, the Ripper
does well
likes
for
Daniels.
200-year-old guy. Yeah. He's been known to find white rabbits, too. It's incredible.
White rabbits?
He follows white rabbits.
Yeah.
Oh. Music.
Be an Alice.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's a lot of
and
fun.
And after a little while, you'll see a white rabbit, too.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, the swallowtail ramp.
Army.
Oh, I can't wait for this cooking show.
I know. Now we've given them the million-dollar idea now. So, hey, just remember us.
You
guys rake it in.
I'll be the sous chef.
Yeah, Jay Wellen and Jack the Ripper.
I'll be a dishwasher.
Change it.
Introducing, yeah. Here,
how to
here.
Roast your friends.
Oh, man.
Now nobody's going to trust the red ketchup.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah.
No, not the ketchup.
Not the ketchup. Well, Daniel always tells him there's a secret ingredient, you know. He's just not, you know, telling what it is.
It's proprietary. I keep telling you that, so.
It's the secret sauce.
But given what you
found
write,
in dark
it does
alley.
Make people a little bit nervous. It does.
And I met Daniel on a roof. Yep.
Yep.
On a roof.
We'll figure that one.
Not a roofie, a roof.
2016, 17.
Yeah, it wasn't 16. No roofies. It was 16. On a roof, a literal roof. Yeah. Yeah, I was a little intoxicated. Ended up on a roof. And that's how I met Daniel. I was like, what the hell?
2016, Imaginarium.
Yes.
Yep, I remember that.
And if anybody knows, that is my favorite period of time ever. I am displaced, too. I should have been born in the 1800s. So here I walk out on this roof, and here's Daniel. And I'm like, what the hell? Hello there, good sir.
Was there a bestie for the restie.
That's kind of the reaction I had when I met Eric. What the hell? What the hell?
I get that a lot.
Well, to be fair, the what the hell is directed at both of him and Dieter Zimmerman, because that's the moment I'm at.
Dieter! Have you ever worked with Dieter, Jay?
No, I have not.
Oh,
yep.
You got to work with Dieter. He is a
Dieter's
professional
one you
pirate.
Want to definitely talk to, yeah, for film, yeah.
He's a character. Oh, my God. Yeah, he's a ball of fun. And he'll get right in there and help with whatever, you know. Yeah, he dives right in. But, yeah, he's a lot
That's
of fun, too.
That's a good quality
too.
To have.
That's right.
Yeah,
multifaceted.
He dives well on screen. I can vouch for that.
Yes, he also dives well. That's always a good quality. Daniel likes those qualities.
I think I'll have to remember that in casting. Do you dive well and do you fall well? How I don't really care about what your other special skills are, if you can horseback ride or you're a ventriloquist. Can you fall well and can you die well?
Die.
Are you okay? Let me see you dying. Oh, okay. You know, we'll get back to you on that.
So like
well,
I mentioned earlier,
you've got Eric
who can do a great urination scene, which is, you know, that's an art.
Nobody does it.
It is impressive. It is impressive. It really is. It's definitely believable.
Yes, it is.
You've got to imagine
yourself
being relieved, you know. You've got to, like, throw yourself, you
Put
know,
yourself
in, the stream, in the stream of it all.
Method acting in the stream.
I see what you did there, Eric. I see what you did there.
Nice. Very, very nice. Very nice.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Oh, man.
Well, before we do get off here, though, Jay, where can we find information about you?
Everything about you, yes.
Everything about me. Facebook,
yes.
Is probably the best place to find information about me. Also, you can find information on what we've got going on at our website at andtelevision.com. That's andtelevision.com as our website. And you can find us, find out more on the Sentinel Chronicles project at the Cynical, at the Cynical Chronicles on Facebook. And our studio is UMN Micro Studios, ANDTV on Facebook.
Very
awesome.
Cool. Very cool.
Okay, Eric, give them your specs.
Yes, yeah, sure. Give them your specs, Eric.
I'm about 5'6" tall, average build, bald.
Do you like long walks on a beach?
I like long walks on a beach. With
Where's eyeliner occasionally?
Say what?
Does wear eyeliner occasionally?
I do wear eyeliner occasionally, especially if I'm in Viking mode. No, you can catch me. I actually have a couple of things. I've got my entire Facebook page. You can check out some of the music stuff there. Obviously, anyone can contact Eric, KYR, on my personal. I've got an actress page by the same name with Eric Kyer. So mainly just on Facebook right now. Still building Kyer Cam Productions, you know, with the audio and the scoring stuff. And more stuff actually coming, working with Nathan Day on a novella. With the movie that Dale and I will be co-directing next year, supernatural thriller. So, yeah, lots of good stuff on the way, man.
Kyer for hire. All right. He's on fire.
He is a musician, too.
He's on fire.
Hey,
yeah, and he does amazing. Oh, my God. He can do a full
style
album of metal. This guy could do metal. I mean, symphonic metal.
Yeah.
I mean, he is awesome. Oh, man, he can do it.
Yeah, actually, I can't wait for Braden to pop out so we can release that thing, man.
Oh, I know.
Yes,
we can't wait for Braden to pop out either. We're right with you. Matter of fact,
we're ready.
Well,
hey, we're close.
And I've actually been wanting to do some scoring for Jay. He just hasn't let me yet.
Yeah, we
want to
show Jay that we can do some good work on our end here. So, yeah, we're eager.
I know you are. In fact, I think I've got our project right now. Eric Kyer and I starring in a 70s sexploitation gangster film as cops. It's Kyer for Hire and Wheelin' and Dealin'.
Yeah. You heard it
nice.
First, our favorite show. You got the scoop, folks.
I am wearing
hey,
my
selection.
Eric Estrada outfit.
Yes.
Yeah, everybody.
Yes,
everybody in the chat room is cheering right now. Robert Osborne's in there and others.
And you have to have a Doctor Who twist, and Daniel Dark appears.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yes. With time travel.
Time travel
and dinosaurs.
And dinosaurs.
I'm not quite that old.
Just 200.
He rides in on a dinosaur.
Oh,
steps to the time portal on his dinosaur.
I want to ride one. I want to ride a dinosaur.
And we signed for illegal parking.
Yes. That'd be great. That would be great. Well, they make those blowed up costumes, you know. We can hop in on one of those. I don't think they make big enough to fit me, but, you know, normal sized people, they make them.
Well, talk to the FFPP guys because they do the big inflatable props on stage. They know how to make the big stuff custom. So
that's true. That is true.
We'll get the dinosaurs
there
made.
The
no problem. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
Call up Core, see if they've still got their dinosaur costumes.
Yeah.
Who?
Core.
Oh!
Guar.
Absolutely.
Live from Antarctica.
That's Jay's next location for his next project.
Well, if I can get it, I'll do it. Believe me, production value. You got to have production value.
Easy production value.
You got to go film in the snow and the rain. And you can't get a good performance out of an actor unless you put them in the mud with fire ants in their crotch. You got to make it believable for them.
Yeah, that's believable.
No more method on that.
That's
a strong method right there.
Oh, man. Well, this
you're
is,
giving believable
this
props,
been...
believable wardrobe. You take them to a believable location, but you got to help them with their motivation. You know what's going to help motivate their passion and their discomfort more than if they're laying there with a crotch full of fire ants.
That'll
do it.
Ben,
please.
That'd
motivate me.
Yeah.
and then throw in the August heat in Atlanta, Georgia. Did that.
Oh,
felt so sorry for the
young.
Felt so sorry
you.
For the young
oh.
lady.
Oh. Wow.
She soldiered on. She pulled it. She did a great job.
That's dedication.
Yes.
Well, Holly, your son will find out about that August Atlanta heat this year.
Yes, Noah moved down there. He's in Gamber Nation. Yeah.
Okay.
He moved down
Shout
there with Ellen
Gamber.
And Jackie and all of them. Mm-hmm.
Jackie was our first AD, and Ellen was a production assistant and stand-in for Raiden on, or Soul Gear Statir, as it were, on our production. So yeah, they took Noah in.
Noah and Ellen hit it off.
And he's gone. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's now in Atlanta.
Yep.
Yep. The love
but by God,
Kentucky
has
set.
Jay Wellen now. So we pulled something back from Atlanta. So. That's good.
Right on.
That's right. My God. That increased our value right there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a good trade or not, though.
I'll let Holly answer.
Well, we
that
definitely. we'll definitely have to collaborate one day. Definitely.
We will. Yeah.
We'll
with everything
we've
got between us, and we will. That goes without saying. And with all the people we've got between us, and the good sentiment, I think that should be no problem whatsoever. And again, I think we've got something here with this wheeling and dealing and Kyrie for hire and Time Lord Dinosaur riding Daniel. And I think we've got inciting him for illegally parking and animal abuse.
And you can always be jolly with Holly.
True, this is true. She can be the hard-nosed captain who reminds us that we're not doing our paperwork properly.
That's right. That's me. That's me. I'm the bulldog of the operation. That's what Steven. I'm the
Holly's
bulldog.
Like, hey, Holly's like, hey, I'm not feeling very jolly right now. You're going to have to sign them papers.
Sign the damn paper. Yeah.
Eric can be the hard nose that plays by his own rules.
Right.
That's right.
And I'll be the guy that's 2 days away from retirement.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Well,
we went a little over, but they can catch
over.
It. People can catch the recording. Here and what?
Streamer
a couple
download
hours,
always
Steven?
Always catch the full show on streamer download. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. It don't take them long. Like a couple hours, it'll be on. No big deal.
No.
And
less than that. 10
Daniel,
minutes.
You,
10 minutes after the live show, it'll be available.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty quick.
They're pretty quick. Yeah, they're quick.
That's better than Giorno's.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Or are you saying Holly?
I was saying, tell them where they can find your stuff.
On Facebook under author or Daniel Dark Author, and right now Knife's Tale. I'm not going to say that it's a good book or anything, but it's up for an Anthony, a Silver Falcon, an Imagine, fiction original Jack the Ripper book, and a Author Academy Awards, so that you can actually go and vote on right now. So look for it in all those different places, and you can find me on Twitter, Goodreads, just about any of the regular social media places, and along with Star Chamber.
Yeah, and of course you can always find the Star Chamber Show at Star Chamber Show, one word, at Twitter and on Facebook. Those are our main two social media channels. So, and then of course, some we follow us on Blog Talk Radio, and they will give you notifications on new shows. And yeah, go to Cafe Press Star Chamber Show, because you can pick up some swag, wear a T-shirt for the show, and it helps because the show is not free to put on. So. It does help us when folks buy shirts and things like that. So I will mention that. But then I will turn it over for a final statement or goodbye or whatever you want to say from Jay and Eric Kyre.
Holly, Daniel, and Stephen, I want to thank you. I want to thank Eric for calling in and joining in as a group alumni. Same thing with Sheridan. Really had a great time chatting with you guys. And I look forward to the possibilities the future brings, and it's been a great experience, and I look forward to an opportunity again in the future with you guys. And if you ever find yourselves in need of my studio's assistance, we're here for you. And Eric, we will get together sometime soon and have us some bourbon and beer and talk about our lives and our friendship and rekindle those things and make sure that we can find a time to do projects together. Again,
awesome.
Thank you guys for the opportunity. I had a great time. I look forward
Thanks
to seeing you in August,
coming,
if not before this, October, excuse me, if not before then. All right?
Fantastic.
Before then, for sure.
Sounds good.
See you
thank
later.
You.
Take care. Good night,
Take
everybody.
It out, Eric.
Great show. Had a blast.
Oh,
good night, everyone.
Bye. Bye.